Most of you will have picked up by now that the season of Lent has got something to do with preparing people for baptism and church membership. The first few generations of Christians were not much into lengthy preparations for baptism. If a person made a decision to commit their lives to Jesus and his people, they were often taken immediately to the nearest available water and baptised then and there. In a culture and a time when becoming a Christian put you at risk of being fed to the lions, it was reasonable to assume that if somebody said they wanted to follow Jesus, they weren't taking it lightly. But a couple of centuries later, all that changed. The Roman Emperor Constantine announced that Christianity was now his religion, and therefore the official religion of the empire. Suddenly, it was not only permissible to identify yourself with the church, but it was politically and socially advantageous. If you were one of Constantine's soldiers or public servants, you were more likely to get promoted if you were known to be a Christian. So suddenly, the churches were being inundated with requests for baptism, no pun intended. And suddenly, it was a whole lot harder to work out whether people were really wanting to commit themselves to the countercultural life of following Jesus in the company of his people, or just wanting to position themselves more advantageously in the world's pecking order. So an already growing practice became all the more necessary, and that was to require a lengthy period of education and spiritual formation before baptism in an effort to ensure that people knew what it meant and that they were fair dinkum in their commitment to living it out. And that process was known as the catechumena. And it often lasted for a year or more, but it culminated in a particularly intense final 40 days, analogous to the 40 days that we heard about last week that Jesus spent in the desert being put to the test to see what he was really made of. This 40 days of intense fasting, self-examination and prayer before the celebration of baptism in the Easter Vigil came to be observed as the season of Lent. And it came to be seen as a chance for all of us to go back to the catechumena, if you like, to ask ourselves again whether we've got what it takes to be the people of God, the followers of Jesus. On each of the Sundays that break up this 40 days, we're confronted with challenging messages from the Bible about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. For some of us, the challenge of tonight's reading may be the most discomforting of all. You see, it's one thing to be warned to count the cost. It's quite another to be told that there is no way of calculating the cost. And that's the clear message of tonight's readings. Most of us have developed some skills in risk assessment. We can do what the business gurus call a cost-benefits analysis and work out whether the costs that we're likely to incur by taking a certain course of action are justified by the expected benefits. Now, if Christian discipleship just involved predictable costs, you know, perhaps 10% of your income and 2.5 hours of your time spent at church each week, we could easily weigh that up against the promise of forgiveness, healing and abundant life in this world and the next and decide that that's not a bad deal. But tonight we're warned that you can't tackle it that way. Jesus speaks of the need to be born twice, once from the womb of your mother and once from the womb of the Spirit. And his description of being born of water and spirit may not have evoked baptismal images for Nicodemus, but there's no doubt that it would have for those to whom the Apostle John was writing when he wrote this down. And when Jesus responds to Nicodemus's bewilderment and elaborates on what he's saying, he compares the life of those who have been reborn of the Spirit to the vagaries of the wind. You can hear the wind coming, he says, and you can see what it does, but what's driving it and where it's going next is anybody's guess.
So it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit. This is clearly not a prediction that the life of the baptized will be an orderly and predictable one. If Jesus is challenging Nicodemus and asked to take a good hard look at ourselves and see whether we've got what it takes to take the plunge, then he's asking us to see whether we've got what it takes to relinquish control over the direction of our lives. He's asking us to release our grip and entrust our future to the unpredictable and untrackable winds of God's Spirit. I think Jarrah's trying to make up for the Grand Prix that's gone quiet, because I think they've stacked a car and Jarrah reckons he can do it all by himself. So if it's about entrusting our future to the unpredictable and untrackable winds of God's Spirit, it's pretty hard to do a cost-benefit analysis on something like that, on something where you're told that you can't know much at all about what will happen if you embark on the journey. If you remember the story that we heard about Abraham in our first reading, you realise that we can't take the sting out of this challenge by assuming that the unpredictability only relates to some kind of spiritual consequences. You know, whether God will want you to get up earlier in the mornings to pray or something like that. It doesn't come much more life-changing than it did for Abraham. And as Paul makes clear in our other reading, Abraham is one of the key figures whose footsteps we are following in if we take the life of faith seriously. God called to Abraham, or Abram as he was called then, and said, "Get up and leave your country, your relatives, the family of your parents, and move to a land that I will show you." Abraham's not even told what land it will be or what it's like. It's just, get up and make tracks, and you'll find out what it means as it unfolds. Just trust me. Now, if you wanted to do a cost-benefit analysis, the benefits that Abraham is promised are pretty spectacular. He's going to be blessed in all the world and all that sort of thing. But he has to weigh them up against the complete unknown. And ultimately, so do we. For most of us here, it's some years since we took the plunge and entrusted our life to the unknown future of God. But looking back now, most of us would probably say that if we could have seen some of what it was going to mean, we'd probably have been even more uncertain and hesitant than we actually were. But most of us will also gladly renew our baptismal promises in the Easter Vigil, because the journey has been more than worth it. Perhaps it's just as well that we actually weren't warned about some of the consequences, because that might have put us off. Because as uncertain as the journey may be, the one into whose hands we have entrusted our lives is one who will stop at nothing, not even a tortured death, to ensure our ultimate safety and well-being. So as you weigh up whether you will join us in recommitting yourself to the life led by the wind of God's Spirit or committing yourself to it for the first time, understand that no one can tell you all that it will mean or where it might take you. It's simply a matter of putting your trust in Jesus, of entrusting your life into the hands of one who will take you who knows where, but who is utterly committed to your best interests and has proved faithful to generations of Spirit-led people before you.